Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Welcome to Out of Office, the podcast about life and leadership. I'm your host, Malika Kapoor. Every week, I bring you a conversation with a newsmaker speaking at a Bloomberg Live summit. This chat, which we record offstage, is freewheeling and it's informal. We go beyond the headlines and talk about things that newsmakers don't get asked about on stage or even in their offices. Their childhood, aspirations, mentors, first jobs, their education, their high points, setbacks, downtime, what they want for Christmas, family and love. Because these influences make them who they are and define how they lead. This week,
what is great, actually, is when people on the street just come up and say, thank you so much. And I get loads of that. Please keep going. Keep battling for the country. Lots of hoots and toots from the taxi community, the black cabs. Great group of Brexiteers. I, you know, quite a few of them give me free cab rides. Yeah, you know who your friends are.
Meet Richard Tice, member of European Parliament and one of the most divisive figures in British politics. He started his career as a businessman, a property developer, but he's always had one foot in politics. From 2015, he became increasingly involved in Brexit and is a founder of the pro-Brexit groups Leave Means Leave and Leave.eu. In 2019, he became chairman of the Brexit Party, which was founded by politician Nigel Farage just a year ago. It's a young party, but it's making headlines.
It was one of the most remarkable elections this country's ever seen, with both Labour and the Tories having historically abysmal results. In last Thursday's European election, Nigel Farage's new Brexit party topped the poll with nearly 32...
Richard spoke about all things Brexit at the Bloomberg Invest Summit in London.
There's nothing worse than a job half done, badly done. So we're going to leave. We want a clean break Brexit that maximises our negotiating position, it minimises the uncertainty, everyone knows where they stand, and we can get on with our lives and get on with adjusting to a post-Brexit world.
That's Richard Tice, the politician. My colleague Ed Stapley caught up with him when he came off stage. They chatted about football. He's a Liverpool fan, his passion for property, his school years, and what Richard Tice wants for Christmas. Here's Ed with the so-called bad boy of Brexit.
So, Richard Tice, welcome to this Bloomberg Live podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Great pleasure.
And welcome to Bloomberg's headquarters.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, I'm a real estate guy and I've never seen a building like it. It's absolutely amazing.
First time here?
It is the first time here. I've been to the previous headquarters a number of times. Hopefully it won't be my last time. I've really enjoyed it. You know, the canteen's extraordinary. The architecture's extraordinary. Yeah. And I gather it's won all sorts of awards.
Indeed. And I guess Mike Bloomberg had a decision to make when choosing where to build his European HQ. And that decision predated Cameron's referendum commitment on Britain's membership of the EU in January 2013. Do you think a company looking to set up a headquarters in Europe today would still 100% go for London?
Oh, definitely. You mean a financial services business? For sure. I mean, let's be very clear. The threat to London, and you know, we will have to live with competition in all our business lives. The threat to London is not Frankfurt or Paris. The threat to London is New York and Asia.
Your family have been involved in property, I think, for generations.
That's right, yeah.
So what made you want to continue in that line of work?
No, I think, look, I grew up steeped in a family of people who are involved in property, my grandfather, my uncle, my cousin. So, you know, that was the natural place to go. I love it. I love the attraction of buildings, planning them, designing them, creating them. And, you know, for me, the pinnacle was when I was chief executive of a London-listed multinational billion-pound company on the edge of the FTSE 250, a business called CLS Holdings. And, you know, we were designing new buildings. And here in London, we designed a very large scheme down in Vauxhall, which included two 50-storey towers. And for me, that was something extraordinary, and they're now underway being built.
Yeah, no, fantastic. And so about 30 years in property investment. Any regrets in that time?
Oh, look, we all make mistakes in life. The key is to learn from them and try and not make them again, and try and make you know, more good decisions than bad decisions. But the thing, you know, successful people know that you achieve that success by you make a decision and then you monitor it and adjust it. And having gone into the world of politics, what I've seen is far too often that actually people in politics and the civil service and too many public services, they're actually not prepared to accept when something's gone wrong and quickly change it and adjust it and be open about it, as opposed to trying to cover it up or pretend that it's not going wrong.
Mm-hmm. And one thing that interests me from a finance point of view here, you managed to navigate the 2008 financial crisis extremely well. I think you sold a significant amount of the property you had by 2007.
Yep.
And then bought again at the bottom of the market in 2009.
Yep, that's absolutely right. You're very well informed. I'm very impressed.
So who were you talking to at the time, and how did you have that edge that other people clearly hadn't seen?
To be honest, just gut instinct. Pure gut instinct, having been involved since, you know, in the markets for, you know, the best part of 20 years. I'd seen a recession in the early 90s, and it just felt wrong. You know, every Tom, Dick and Harry amateur was piling into the residential market and the commercial market in the mid-2000s. The banks were doing some extraordinary things. I mean, you know, you could borrow more than 100% on a commercial property loan from the Scottish banks. And that you just knew in your heart of hearts that was wrong. And people were just bidding ridiculous sums for property. We had a business, we had 100 people. And do you know what? It was a private business and we just felt it was wrong. And so we said, let's do the opposite. Let's take a very early view. We went from 100 people down to 15. We did that in 05 by outsourcing lots of our house building. You know, all those people were able to get jobs because it was still a booming economy, but we de-risked the business. And so by the time the recession hit, basically the business had a pile of cash and no debt. And, you know, again, that's long-term gut instinct. And yes, I paused for a couple of years, did some advisory work in the debt world. And then in 2009, I got stuck back into corporate bonds, which were completely mispriced in the real estate sector at a time of distress. And then when I joined CLS in 2010, again, the market was still on the floor, but I could see great buying opportunities. And over a three-year period, we bought over 200 million quid's worth of real estate near the bottom of the market.
Okay. I want to talk a bit about your journey to getting where you are now and a bit about, you know, your upbringing. You grew up in the Midlands and attended the private boarding school Uppingham, where you're now the vice chair. What were your likes and dislikes at school?
What were the likes and dislikes? I wasn't great on the academic side. I enjoyed the sporting side. You know, Uppingham was a pretty sort of tough school back in the late 70s. You know, if you needed to go to the loo, you had to go outside. So, you know, things have changed a lot. Yeah. But, you know, I've always been more of a, believe it or not, I'm 6'2" now. In those days, I was actually really quite short. Some people used to call me Titch. So I was hooker in the scrum. That was always pretty painful. But no, you know, I got through the school years, went to university to do a very technical degree, but that stood me well in the real estate sector.
Now, I don't know if you'll thank me for this, but I looked into your A-levels.
Yes. God, I'm impressed by your research. It's amazing.
I noticed you got two E's.
Yes, yeah.
One in politics and one in maths, but an A in economics.
Yes, so there we are.
Was that you waiting your revision? Or did you get unlucky with the questions on that?
So no, being candid, I just messed up the revision on politics. So that was just a Horlicks. My maths teacher and I didn't get on. And I think with maths, you know, like in any subject, you can hit a glass ceiling in something. And for me, just after what were then called O-levels, I discovered a bit later I'd hit the glass ceiling. But economics was what really, you know, I loved it. And in a sense, that interest is what sort of driven me ever since. And despite the poor exam result in politics, I've always had an interest in it, always loved it. And here we are. Mm-hmm.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
What was it like growing up in the Tice household? Were you close to your siblings and parents growing up?
Yeah, no, we were pretty close. Two of us went, my brother and I went to the same school, Uppingham. My sister, she was at a day school, and then she went to Gordonston. So yeah, we were, you know, pretty close in the holidays. My parents basically were separated from the year dot. So, you know, that comes with different sort of challenges. And, but no, I was, you know, I was very lucky. Many would say I was born with a silver spoon in my mouth, you know. I was very lucky. So I'm very cognizant of giving something back, mm-hmm. and playing my part in society.
And I think you've got kids of your own.
Yeah, I've got three kids.
Do you have political conversations with them around the dinner
table?
Yeah,
very much so, very much so. I've got two boys and a girl. Just the girl's the only one still at school in her last year. You know, politics obviously is part of our discussion, and you know, we agree on some things and we disagree on other things. In fact, it was my second son who helped educate me when he was on his gap year in Asia about, you know, the environmental damage caused by plastics, people just discarding plastics. The sort of the plastic mountains he saw on the beaches of Vietnam, taught me about the plastic island that is in the Pacific Ocean. And, you know, that was really, really educational for me. I was very grateful for that.
Mm. If you, thinking back to when you were 20, and is there anything you would wish you knew then that you know now?
That's a great question. Yeah, lots and lots of things. Networking, just keep talking to lots of people. And funnily enough, on the one hand, social media is good for networking, but on the other hand, it's actually very bad for talking. And I probably then wasn't a great talker, more open networking. Believe it or not, actually, I used to be quite shy. And so, you know, walk into a room, I'd sort of slightly sort of stay at the door. But actually, you make your own luck. You've got to, you know, make your own networking. And you know what? There's nothing like knowing people, being able to pick up a phone, and build that network of contacts and build connections. It's amazing how that helps you throughout your working life.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you went on to, as you said, Salford University. How do you enjoy that, and what do you make of Manchester?
Manchester was a very different city then. I mean, it was really tough, and Salford was very much the rough end of it. But it was a really diligent technical course I did. Look, to be honest, they used to call me a bit of a sort of southern poofter. And I had a Renault 5 Turbo at the time. So, you know, I was known as Dick Turbo. But no, it was great. I didn't play rugby there. I played soccer. We played in the local leagues. And it was, you know, it was really good for me. I'm probably one of the few people that has been to Strangeway Prison, not once, but twice. I'm pleased to say that was to play football,
right,
where we played against the inmates. And it won't surprise you to learn, you'll probably be pleased to learn, we always had to play away.
Wow, that must have been interesting. So
it was.
Where did you play?
I was goalkeeper.
Okay, right.
And so at Strangeways Prison, to this day, I never forget, I basically fouled an attacker, gave away a penalty, and one of the inmates came up to me and he said, if you know what's good for you, son, you'll let this in.
And you did.
And I did.
Yeah, right. Okay, very interesting. So then, you know, fast forwarding to where we are now, You've been involved in campaigning, funding and supporting Brexit for many years. You co-founded Leave.eu in 2015. You've been really successful in business and, you know, you've got a lot of charitable causes. Why is it so important to you to be involved in politics now? What draws you to it?
I've always been drawn to it. I've always had an interest in it. I like being involved in well-run businesses. And I have a simple expression. If the country was run as well as a well-managed, lean, efficient business, then frankly, we'd all be in a much better place. And I always said to myself, I'd want to do give or take 30 years in business and then try and give something back to public life.
What have you made of former Prime Minister David Cameron's new book, On the Record? Quite a candid account of his time in office?
I haven't actually read it. I'm sort of hoping someone might give it to me for Christmas. Right. Generally, I read books on an iPad, but no, it'd be great if someone gives it to me. I've seen some of the serialisation. I think, obviously, I have to be grateful to Cameron because he gave us the referendum. What I'm not grateful for was his disgraceful involvement in Project Fear. What he should have done as Prime Minister is he should have basically said, look, this is my view. I'm going to say it a couple of times, and then I'm going to act as a presidential-style referee and call out both sides if they talk a load of nonsense. If he'd done that, he would still be Prime Minister. He didn't. He got stuck in the weeds. He chose the wrong side. He was heavily involved in Project Fear, which turned out to be a load of complete nonsense. And the rest is history.
So Brexit has divided friends and family throughout the country. Boris Johnson's recently found that.
He certainly has.
Have your friendships or relationships suffered as a result of Brexit? Have you friends with many Remainers at all?
Yes, no, I am. And I would say a sizable chunk of my friends vote. They're what I would call moderate Remain voters. Almost all of them now would actually vote Leave on the basis of democracy and how the EU has behaved since. Where I've actually really lost people on a much more sort of the basis of angst and anger is actually in the business community. I mean, the real estate community in London, you know, I mean, some people have been absolutely, I mean, they've just gone off the chart. So, you know, look, stuff happens. And when you put your head above the parapet, and, you know, most in the business community are not brave enough to do that. But if you put your head above the parapet, you know, the grief, the angst, the vitriol comes over in bucket loads.
And you're a big Twitter.
I use Twitter. And yeah, I mean, the abuse is hysterical. It's ridiculous. I don't look at it. My kids do. It upsets them. I'm broad-shouldered. It's the nature of it. What is great, actually, is when people on the street just come up and say, thank you so much. And I get loads of that. Please keep going. Keep battling for the country. Lots of hoots and toots from the taxi community, the black cabs. Great group of Brexiteers. I get, you know, quite a few of them give me free cab rides. Yeah, you know who your friends are.
Sounds all right. Outside of business and politics, what do you do for fun?
So over the years, you know, I've played a fair bit of golf. Skiing is my big thing. Mm-hmm. I used to do five-a-side soccer until recently.
So I keep calling it soccer. What was the soccer?
Yeah, soccer, football, you know. skiing is my big thing. I've recently got into cycling and spin classes. I would say I'm sort of moderate at it, a bit of a clueless amateur, but it's great exercise. I love it.
Okay, great. And a Liverpool fan as well.
Yeah, and
pretty,
you know,
good year at the moment.
Been a very patient Liverpool fan over many decades since the mid 70s. But, you know, this could be our year. This
have you got really a favourite player?
Over the years, I mean, you know, Dalglish was sort of probably my hero, but obviously at the moment it has to be Salah.
Yes, of course. And finally, how would you describe yourself in three words?
Goodness me. I'm an optimist. The glass is always half full. It's never half empty.
Optimist, optimist, optimist.
Optimist, optimist, optimist.
Bridget Tice, thank you very much.
Great to be here.
That was Ed Stapley in conversation with Brexit Party Chairman Richard Tice. I hope you enjoyed that chat as much as I did. Our new podcast series, Out of Office, Conversations about Life and Leadership, launches on January 16th. And you'll be able to catch all the episodes on the Bloomberg Terminal, on our website, Bloomberg.com, on Apple Podcasts, or on Spotify. We are also on Twitter, where our handle is simply @podcasts. We'd love it if you could take a minute to rate and review our show, so please do that if you can. And I really hope you'll join us again for more candid, informal conversations with newsmakers. This episode was produced by Laura Carlson. I'm Malika Kapoor. You can find me at This Is Malika on Twitter. Thank you for listening.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.